Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Here we go with the Tuesday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm hoping for no technical difficulties, but I was a little worried we were going to start out with one there anyways. I'm the Big Jack, and with Dan still in Boston, Schomburg Stu was nice enough to come by and fill in for him.
Well, I hope that Dan's taking advantage of being in Boston and taking a couple of games at the Fenway.
I believe he was scheduled to go today. And as far as I know, they're coming back tomorrow. Of course, unless he's flying United, then you don't know when he's going to be back.
Yeah. Hope he doesn't come back bloodied.
So, yeah, it's possible. But anyways, if you'd like to call into the podcast today, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturday mornings, so look for a new one tomorrow. But there is various content added throughout the week, so continue to swing on over there and check that out, see what's going on. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, you can hit that link, get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that way over there, well, we greatly appreciate that. There's also the Sports Time Radio Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. I am out there in the Twitterverse at Burke Time, and sadly, we still don't have Stu out there yet, but who knows, maybe one of these days.
Well, keep hoping.
You can tweet your opinion in 140 characters or less. See how that works out for you?
Wow, that's pretty convenient.
So, you know, then you can hide from everybody else and call everybody names like, you know, a lot of people do with it.
Can I put emojis on? Or is that a different one?
I'm sure you could do it. Actually, you can. I don't know how, but I'm sure there's plenty of people who could show you how to do it.
But not yourself.
You know, I'm not that technologically advanced. I can do the typing and stuff, but you know, when it comes to adding stuff or just kind of figuring it out is enough for me. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. So, but I heard the big thing today, and I'm a little surprised that this was such a controversy. You know, they're doing a thing in Dallas where it's their Mavericks' last regular season game, and they're going to allow Tony Romo to suit up. Now, he's not going to play in the game. He's just going to dress and go through the warm-ups. I guess it's – you would almost call it a fantasy camp. Now, you know, this is really – bothered a lot of these sports writers or the sports experts, however you look at these guys. I got to tell you, I don't really care if he's not playing in the game. It doesn't really affect me. Can you tell me what the uproar about this is?
Well, perhaps he's going to be into broadcasting now, right?
Yeah, he signed with CBS.
Well, maybe they're figuring that he kind of has an unfair advantage in going through this training camp situation, and he'll use that in some of his commentaries on the on CBS. So maybe that's a leg up, unfair. I don't know. I can't think of any other reasons. What's your take on it?
Yeah, obviously the only reason he's getting to do this is because he was the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys.
Right.
I mean,
right.
When you retired, the Cubs didn't ask you to come in and take batting practice, did they?
I don't think so, no.
So, you know, it's just, again, it's kind of, you know, it's one of the perks. And that's the thing about it is I almost think the reaction is a little more jealousy than it is anything else because he's going to get this opportunity. And what's weird is what they all add on at the end of the, you know, their conversation or article, no matter how much they like or dislike this or whatever, they all go on to mention that he is actually a very good basketball player and could have possibly been in the NBA had he not decided to go the NFL route. So I again, I don't know what the issue is.
Yeah, I can't figure that out. I'm just saying that maybe it relates to his new career, and it's an unfair advantage. That's the only thing I can think of.
I just thought it seemed weird.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to – that's one of those things that will die down in a day or two and no one will ever remember it again.
I guess, is that what you bring up when you're just tired of talking about Cleveland and LeBron sitting out games? You talk about Tony Romo?
You got to do something to instead of talking about LeBron, you got to go through other things, right?
I guess you got to come up with – whatever idea you got, but, we are coming down to the end of the regular season. I mentioned Dallas wraps up tonight. Of course, the big important stuff all happens tomorrow. The Pacers, the Bulls, and the Heat all play their final game. Right now the Pacers are in seventh. They're a game ahead of the Bulls, who, of course, are in eighth, and they have the same record as the Heat, but the Bulls hold the tiebreaker. Now, on paper, you would think the Bulls have the big favor here as they're playing the Brooklyn Nets, but as you and I know from going through this Bulls season, that may be a bigger disadvantage for them than an advantage. Miami is playing the Wizards, who are locked into their position, so you don't know if maybe they're going to rest guys. And Indiana is taking on Atlanta, who is also locked in their playoff position, so you don't know what the Hawks are going to do. So I don't know. Is it one of these things where we see the Bulls losing and the Heat winning and the Bulls get knocked out by the team with the worst record in the NBA?
Theoretically, of course, the Bulls have a huge advantage over both of those teams because they play the weakest opposition, just how they did against them last Saturday. Hey, how did that game turn out anyway?
Yeah. actually, the Bulls lost 107-106.
That's right. And, of course, this game is at home, and the Bulls certainly looked dominant last night against Orlando. That was I think they said that was the worst loss for Orlando in their existence.
Yeah, well, it was what, 47 points or something? I mean,
it was just
quite the embarrassment.
Very embarrassing. And now just watch. The Bulls will turn around tomorrow night and get blown out of the building by Brooklyn. And if that happens, you think the Boo Bears will be out if that does occur?
Being at home, you've got to think so. I mean, if they don't go out and just, more or less wipe the floor with the Nets, the crowd has got to, got to be all over them. So, while it's not, I want to say interesting how this is going to play out, I am interested to see what Washington does or Atlanta does with their players, because that had a big effect on the play, this could all be over if Cleveland maybe would have just played their guys last night.
Yeah, sure.
Because Miami did get by them, but it ended up being, a 1-point game or
it was 3 points in overtime. What was it, 121-118?
Yeah.
I think that was the score.
Yeah, and I know Cleveland had the ball, last with a chance to tie, and I know I saw Channing Frye miss the shot. So, but yeah, I mean, you wonder if, LeBron had played and Kyrie had played and Tristan Thompson had played, if, we wouldn't even be talking about this now and the playoff race would be over.
If the Bulls make the playoffs, I think they'll beat Brooklyn tomorrow night. They don't wind up playing Cleveland in the first round, though. Don't they wind up playing Boston?
Yeah, right now that's how it's set up. I don't know. I know Cleveland has one more game. I'm going to guess Boston does, too. Let me look ahead here. Well, this is interesting. Cleveland is playing Toronto. Now, all these teams are locked in. Milwaukee's playing Boston. Toronto and Milwaukee can't improve their playoff position. The only team that can is Cleveland, because they hold the tiebreaker on Boston. But they've already announced that LeBron will be sitting out. So he's not going to play tomorrow either. It seems like they're just conceding the number one seed, which means the Bulls would play the Celtics.
That's why Cleveland's doing it, of course, because you know what happened during the regular season between the Cleveland and the Bulls.
Yes.
They're afraid of
Yes, they don't want to face Yeah, they don't want to face the Bulls in the first round, so they're avoiding them. That's been a little bit of talk is, you know, more and more guys are sitting out these final games. I just heard Russell Westbrook, the Oklahoma City Thunder, announced that he's going to sit out tomorrow. That came as a little bit of a surprise to me. I wasn't expecting that. He seems kind of like the guy that just plays regardless. And not that it matters in the standings, but Carmelo is also going to sit out the last Knicks game. And you have to wonder if that's going to be it for him, you know, as a Knick.
That could be it. His career with them could be over with. And, well, here's a question for you. I think you know that it's the second season starts, right? The playoffs start. And it seems to me that there seems to be more intensity in the NHL playoffs when it starts, like a second season completely. And to me, it's different than the NBA. What's your take on that one?
Yeah, well, you know, the NHL has proven that in the playoffs, these lower seeds can beat the higher seeds. In the NBA, that so rarely happens. I mean, when you look at what would be the opening round matchups just right now, if everything stays the same. And to be fair, I believe the Western Conference is set. So let me go down there and we'll start there. Okay, we've got Golden State against Portland. Does Portland have a chance in that series? Will they win a game?
They might win one game.
San Antonio plays Memphis. Memphis is set up to give San Antonio a little trouble, but I still don't think they win more than one game. Do you?
At the outside, I would think they might squeeze in two wins there, unlike the other rounds in Portland and GS.
Then we're looking at Houston against, you know, we got Houston against Oklahoma City. While it's a good matchup on paper, you know, really all Oklahoma City has is James Harden. He's not going to be able to outscore all those Houston three-point guys. You know, maybe Oklahoma gets a game, you know, if he goes off and scores 50-plus. But, you know, that's not really a series unless you have Oklahoma City pulling off a huge upset.
No upset there. I don't think that's going to happen.
You know, and then now this series will probably be interesting. The 4-5 normally are. You got the Clippers and the Jazz. You know, they have the same record. They're very evenly matched. You know, maybe that's the series that you get seven games out of and possibly the lower seed wins it. But other than that, you know, do you give none of these other lower seeds have a chance?
No,
so it makes for a boring round of the playoffs.
Yeah, the 4-5 usually is the closest place series.
Yeah. You know, and, you know, even in the East, we talked about it, you know, are the Bulls going to win more than one game from the Celtics if that's the matchup they get?
I wouldn't say them winning more than one. Maybe one game at home and that's it.
Yeah. You know, I don't see the Pacers winning the Pacers won't win a game from the Cavaliers if the Cavaliers decide to play all those guys. That's a sweep. So, Toronto and Milwaukee could be interesting.
Yeah, that would be an interesting. I think Milwaukee's an up-and-coming young team, and they might give them they might win a game or two there.
Yeah, you know, Toronto has had its choking moments in the playoffs, so I could see that. Now, the 4-5 here, I don't think is going to be as competitive. It's Washington against Atlanta, and I really think Washington is a much better team than Atlanta. While I wouldn't be surprised to see Atlanta win, you know, one or possibly even a second game. You know, as long as Washington plays composed, which I know they have a tendency to fall apart at times, I think they're the better team than Atlanta, and they would move on easily.
Yeah, you don't think any of these games would go past six games in the first round anyway.
The only one I could see could be the Clippers and the Jazz being a tight seven-game type series. And then that's so weird to me because while they're playing, everybody else is just sitting around waiting for them to finish. It's like, okay, great. So, yeah, you know, there's like zero intrigue in the first round of the NBA playoffs.
And this is completely different from the NHL.
Yeah. You know, I mean – the NHL is one of those things. I mean, you just never know. I mean, as much as I'd hate to see it, Nashville could eliminate the Blackhawks in the first round, and the Blackhawks are the top seed in the Western Conference. You know, we've seen the Capitals have their struggles. They're the number one seed. I think they were the number one seed last year. And, you know, it was Pittsburgh who won the Cup. So, you know, these things tend to happen a little more in the NHL. And, you know, it makes for exciting stuff. You know, there's not a ton of sweeps. You know, every now and then you run into that team that just dominates a team. The matchup just doesn't work, or however it's set up, and a team just gets dominated and blown out of the building. But, you know, the majority of these things go, you know, 5-6 games at least. And, you know, even the games a team loses, it's not, you know, it's not a 5-0 shutout or anything like that. They're losing 3-2 in regulation or 3-2 in overtime. So, you know, it adds a little something to it. Yeah. You know, the games are just...
And, of course, hockey is the only game, and they're, you know, the strange bounce of the puck can do it, a bounce off the post. So, in a closely played contest, those things can be a factor. The best team is not always going to win. Of course, we could say that for any sport. But I happen to think about one thing.
Yeah, you know, maybe, hockey...
Yeah, go ahead.
Hockey is that one thing where... You know, where the best team can actually lose a series. You know, normally in the NBA, you know, like you say the Cleveland's out and they're flat and they lose game one. Well, that's normally it. Then they win the next four games against Indiana and the season's over.
Right, right.
You know, hockey that happens, or, you know, God forbid, you know, you could play terrible on offense. If you got the hot goaltender, you're winning 1-0 on some weird goal that bounced in off a defenseman's leg. That's not happening in the NBA. Yeah. You know, I mean, you know, you're not bouncing the ball off the opposing guy's head and it's going in the basket for you to win a game. So, you know, it makes hockey a whole lot more exciting, I think, come playoff time.
And this is why there hasn't been a repeat Stanley Cup winner for many, many years in the NHL.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's difficult to, you know, continue to just kind of roll through. I mean, when you know, you look at it, I mean, the NBA, we've had the same two teams in the finals the last 2 years, and they're both pretty much favored to get back there. And without saying it and really saying it, I really think that's what the NBA and their television providers would like to see. So I won't be surprised at all if they somehow make that happen, so to speak.
Well, there's been speculation about that, of course, and they say it's unfounded, but I'm not so sure sometimes. And when was the last time, by the way, when was the last time a surprise team won the NBA championship? An unheralded team, a lower-ranked team, team not in the hunt, not a favorite, as has been the case the last few years. Can you remember back when that happened? I can't.
Oh, I was going to say, do they still have, do they still have surprise teams anymore? I mean... looking back, I mean, who would be, you know, the big shock? Maybe you'd have to go back. What year did Dallas beat Miami? The start of that Miami dynasty. I got to look it up here.
That goes back several years now.
2011, when Dallas, who really only had the one superstar in Dirk Nowitzki, beat, you know, the vaunted Heat with, I believe that was the first year of LeBron, Wade, and Bosch. And the Heat managed to win that series.
But was Dallas...
The Mavericks.
Yeah, was Dallas the number one seed in the West? Were they the favorites to win the West? The year they won the NBA.
That I Miami. They may have been. I don't remember, you know, obviously, standings-wise, you know, who was where, but... It's, luckily with the internet nowadays, it's definitely possible to look everything up. So let me see if I can find the standings here, and I can tell you who ended up where. If this is right, and I'm trying to figure out if I'm possibly a year ahead, Dallas was the 7th seed in the West.
Wow,
so if that is correct, they were a big underdog.
Yeah, but that's what, 6 years ago. Nothing has been even close to that since. But that is a big surprise. I didn't think they would be that ranked that low in the West at that time.
Yeah, it actually looks like I am a year ahead. I need 2010, 2011. I have 2011, 2012. So let me make the adjustment, and we'll see if we get a better factor here, and see if we can get a better idea. I would be surprised to see them drop all the way to pop up all the way to one and then drop to seven, but we'll try it again here. I guess you'd call them a bit of a surprise. They were the 3 seed in the 2010-2011 season when they won it all. So
that's not as big a surprise, of course, as they're one of the top 3 teams in the league in the conference, so that's not a big surprise. A big surprise, of course, is beating Miami, a super team like that.
Yeah, and that was the year, actually, the Bulls were the number 1 seed in the Eastern Conference that year. So,
lest we forget.
So, but, yeah, you know, when you kind of start looking back, I mean, you know, there aren't too many surprises. You know, the thing about the NBA is, you know, the better team genuinely wins out, you know, in the end. You know, it's very rare that, you know, because if a team pulls an upset off in one round, it's rare that they can continue over to the next round with all the playoff games and all the stuff they got now. If it was a shorter, you know, span and you didn't have the 3 rounds or the 4 rounds, we might see a little more of it. But I don't think you will now, just because there's, you know, too many games, and in the end, you know, the better team normally wins.
Yeah. And that's the way it's been running out the last 4 or 5 years.
So, yeah, it's just one of those, you know, one of those situations where, you know, the gap is so big between a 1 seed and an 8 seed that I don't know if they can make up the ground.
No, when you're in that mix, when you're a 500 team, a 4 or 5 games over 500 team, it's going to take you a long, long way to climb back up to the top echelons of the NBA. You're going to be mired in a little above mediocrity, and that could last a long time.
Yeah, and that's why a lot of the teams do the tanking. You know, they get stuck in that, you know, if you're a 7 or an 8 seed or, you know, that 9 and 10 and you're in that area, you can't get out of it. Unless you get really lucky with a draft pick, or, you know, maybe you sign the right European player and, you know, they can come in and make a difference. But it's, you know, it's a rarity now. Once you get in those spots, and, you know, we're actually dealing with it here in Chicago, you know, the Bulls are kind of in that spot. You know, they never pick any better than like 13 or 14. And it's hard to find that, you know, big stud talented player that's going to carry your team at that spot.
Right. And then at best, then there'll be a 44 win team. And
losing the
second round at if they're fortunate.
Yeah. You know, and then that doesn't help you, because then you go farther up the draft board, you know, and you're picking in your worst position. You know, and I mean, you know, I get it occasionally, you know. Yeah, you know, I mean, I get it. Occasionally, a team gets lucky. You know, the Bulls found Jimmy Butler, you know, middle, late of the first round. You know, the Spurs hit on Tony Parker when they got him out of the European League. You know, you can find these guys, but, you know, I mean, look at how weak just this past NBA draft was. You know, there's not a contributing player out of this draft.
Yeah, it's a weak one this time.
Yeah. You know, the one guy, you know, right at the top got hurt, Ben Simmons. He was supposed to be the guy. Did he play a regular season game, or I think he got hurt before the regular season started.
They were saying
the other guy was Brandon Ingram. The Lakers took him second. They were supposed to be clearly above the other guys in the draft. And Ingram didn't do much with the Lakers this year. you know, and you would think he would have had an opportunity to shine on a bad team, but it, you know, it didn't, you know, it didn't really go his way. Let me, I want to hunt down his stats here because I don't know, I don't see a lot of Laker games with the times they're on. Here you go. He played in 77 games, made 38 starts, averaged 28.8 minutes a game, and scored 9.3 points per game. And he's the number two pick in the draft.
And those stats don't sound like a number two pick in the draft, do they?
No. So, you know what I mean? You know, kind of looking here at, you know, some of these things. You know, I know Jamal Murray, the Nuggets took him at 7, had a couple big-time scoring games but didn't put it together. You know, the Bucks took Thon Maker at 10, and I believe he spent some time in the D-League. He was the 10th pick in the draft. You know, so you're just kind of, you know, you just kind of wonder, you know, what, you know, what happens or what goes into it, but they're just, you know, there wasn't a ton of talent hanging around. I mean, you know, even into the second round, the only name I recognize in the second round is the Bucks took Malcolm Brogdon. And the only reason I remember that name is because he put up a triple double against the Bulls this year.
Yeah. Well, that's competition wasn't there. But you have to feel sorry for Milwaukee, though. They have a good young team, and they did make a great selection a couple of years ago, but the guy's always hurt.
Yeah.
Second year in a row that he won't finish the season.
Yeah, this is, this is two years in a row. I don't even think he's coming back for the playoffs. I think he's just done. You know, at least he played a little bit this year. He played in 51 games as compared to last year. I think he played about a week. So, but yeah, you just want to, you know, and you wonder, you know, there's always those guys that, you know, seem to be injury prone. You know, you make these big draft picks and the guys just, for whatever reason, can't stay healthy. You know, I mean, you can go all the way back to, you know, remember when Portland took Sam Bowie over Michael Jordan. And while Bowie was a good player, he could never stay healthy enough to perform. So they'll always get that rubbed in their face just because he was an injury-prone guy. And then I believe Greg Oden was another guy. You know, I mean, he was a monster in college, couldn't stay healthy in the pros, never produced anything. And, you know, he didn't even last. I think he lasted 3 years in the league.
I wonder why so many of those players are injury prone like that. Do you ever figure out any reason for it, or just the luck of the draw, or I just don't.
I don't know Jabari Parker situation, but I've heard some medical, you know, information that the doctors believe with the larger guys, you know, the Bowies, the Owens, and even Yao Ming, he had to retire early. They believe their feet aren't structured properly to take the pounding that an NBA player takes going up and down the floor, you know, with the size of their body and just everything that's put on their feet. They don't believe they can handle it physically, and it causes them to break down. You know, and this is just the case with the larger guys. I mean, a guy like, you know, Derrick Rose, it just seems to be bad luck or whatever. You know, that he keeps getting hurt all the time. But, you know,
what about guys like Russell and Chamberlain, though? They seem to have long, productive careers.
Yeah.
So you never know.
Yeah, well, you know, and Shaq never really, you know, Shaq was never really injured pro. Neither was Akeem. You know, it seems like it happens to some guys and it doesn't happen to others.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, But that's, of course, logical what you said about the pounding they take up and down the court, 35, 40 minutes a game on some of the top players, and it's got to wear you out eventually, especially if you're 6'6", 6'7", even in that, 6'8". It's got to be jarring to the frame. Some people can handle it.
Yeah, you know,
reason.
You know, I mean, if your frame is a little slighter, you know, I mean, like Derrick Rose isn't a huge guy. I mean, he's barely pushing 6 feet, and he's not – you know, obviously he's not in terrible shape because he's an NBA player, but he's not overly muscled, you know, a little smaller guy. You know, that beating can get to those guys like that. I mean, even just the banging of an everyday game And, you know, that's, you know, the little guys like that, that's a lot of torque and pressure on their joints. And, you know, eventually they just give out.
Yeah, Rose is one of those guys that looks like that one injury caused other injuries, and it just compounded the situation for him.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he was looking like a guy who was going to have a very good, very long career. And, yeah, the one blowout, which everybody still blames on Tom Thibodeau, you know, that was it. It's almost like he never recovered from it and just continued to get hurt.
Yeah, that was catastrophic for him. And is his contract up this year with New York?
Yeah, he'll be a free agent this offseason.
You think there'll be any teams out there taking a chance with him?
You know, I mean, if the price is right, you know, I think somebody takes a look at him. You know, and you wonder now if maybe he just settles in somewhere as a backup. You know, he just kind of goes and, you know, I mean, because, you know, as weird as it sounds, he would be a perfect fit for a team like the Cavaliers, who have a backup point guard now in Deron Williams, but they looked for one forever all season. But, you know, I mean, Derrick Rose would fit that bill perfectly if Kyrie Irving's healthy in front of him. You know, he's playing 20, 25 minutes a game. You know, that's the perfect job for a guy like him.
Yeah, the key is staying healthy, of course. And will he take a chance?
You know. Yeah, and, you know, that's the big key. You know, I'm sure there's somebody out there who's going to, you know, going to reach out to him and see, you know, and of course he may price himself out of the market depending on, you know, what kind of payday he's looking for and stuff like that. But, you know, we'll see how his off season goes. But yeah, I, as long as he wants to, I kind of assume he'll be in a uniform somewhere next year.
Yeah, but he's going to have to cut he's going to have to reduce his expectations salary-wise, I think. And he's kind of arrogant in that respect. And I don't know if will he do that.
No, you know, and I know a lot of guys run into that problem, you know, when they're not a star anymore, you know, so to speak, kind of taking that step down can be difficult. And, you know, accepting that role is, you know, okay, well, you know, I'm just going to come off the bench, or I'm just going to do, you know, this or that or whatever. So, you know, we'll have to see, you know, can he be that guy, or, you know, who knows, maybe he's just done. You know, there's always been kind of a question about his, you know, his actual love for the game. So, you know, who knows, maybe he'll just walk away.
That's possible if he would do that, and what would he do then?
Well, you know, I don't know. You'd like to think he's got enough money. Yeah, you'd like to think he's got enough money not to worry about it. So, you know, yeah, maybe he'll just, you know, stay home and roll around in all the millions he made.
Yeah, but I hope he was smart, like you said, invested wisely and doesn't have too much of an entourage that he has to pay, because some of these guys are...
You know, that's always a fear. You know, that was Allen Iverson's downfall, is he couldn't let go of his buddies from the neighborhood. You know, he kept them all around and, you know, kept finding things for them to do. And, you know, the next thing he knew he was broke. You know, and sadly, once you're broke, these guys are gone. You know, they're not hanging around to be your buddy, once you're out of money. So...
I was reading about, I can't remember if it was a football player or not, but or basketball, but he got his big contract and he went out and bought 20 luxury cars. I mean, what do these guys do that for? I don't understand it.
I heard the one story, I wish I could remember the guy's name. He went out and did something like that, except I think he bought, it might've been 10 cars, and his mother, of all people, stepped in and made him return 9 of the cars. She just kind of she chastised him. And, you know, it was how many of these are you actually going to drive at one time? She's like, so pick one and take all the other ones back. And, yeah, she actually made him return 9 of the cars. I thought it was, in reality, it was an incredibly smart thing for her to make him do. But, yeah, I just thought it was hilarious.
Yeah,
So
that's funny. That is funny, and I hope he later in his life, when he's not playing, or he realizes what a smart move that was.
So yeah, I hope so too. You know, these people actually realize that their parents are, you know, trying to help them in this situation. You know, they're not. You know, while you ended up sadly kind of looking foolish, she was really doing it for the right reasons. You know, and it's just like, what were you going to do? You know, like what you said, what are you going to do with 20 cars? How many are you going to drive?
Right.
You know?
Exactly. I mean, that foolish, invest wisely, and you're set for life.
Yeah, you know, and that's, you know, that's the tough thing. I mean, we've seen, you know, how many of these stories now where, you know, a guy makes, you know, just multiple millions of dollars, and you know, then his career is over, and it's just all gone. You know, where'd it go? He, you know,
some of these guys wind up homeless.
Yeah,
and it's happened.
Yeah, it's quite sad with you know, some of these situations when you look into it. I mean, because, you know, we're talking about guys who made, you know, at times hundreds of millions of dollars playing their sport, and there's just, you know, there's no money for them.
They're broke. This ball player that was missing,
you know,
was that young? Was that was he in financial problems? Do you know what they found the guy? The police found this guy that was missing. Was it a former Atlanta player? I'm trying to remember now, but I'm wondering if that was.
Yeah, it was Otis Nixon.
Was. That's right.
You know, he was not only a former Atlanta player. He had played for quite a few teams. But you know, I knew they found him, but I didn't see if there was a reason or anything for it.
I was trying to find out what happened. I know they said they found him, but that was about all the information they gave out. And I always often wonder what could have caused that kind of a problem. Was it psychological issues? Was it monetary issues? Who knows?
Yeah, they all they have here is he was found safely Monday afternoon. That's all they put out. And yeah,
that's right. Rather cryptic information, and you always wonder what happened there.
Yeah, you know, you wonder if it was a, you know, something he wanted to do, just kind of disappear, or, you know, how it worked out. But,
yep.
You know, like the, you know, the police quotes say here, it just says, you know, he's been located, so our case is closed. You know, so there's no need for them to investigate further. And, you know, if Nixon wants to make a statement, it's now, you know, up to him and his, yeah, I believe he lives with a girlfriend who reported him missing. So.
But yeah, financially, you think most of you guys should be set, but it doesn't always work out that way in many cases.
Yeah, you know, it's a lot of, you know, in some cases, guys just kind of overspend. You know, and in other cases, you know, guys just, you know, when you look at Curt Schilling, you know, he lost all his money in that video game company.
Yeah.
You know, he started that company. He thought he had a hit. It looked like he had a hit. And then they had one bad, you know, game. I don't remember what the issue was with it, but they had one bad game or review or something didn't go the way they wanted it to. And, you know, nobody would buy their stuff. They couldn't get any games sold. And, you know, he ended up going bankrupt.
Yeah. Well, I have to say it. He's not the greatest human being in the world anyway, let's face facts.
Yeah, no, his Twitter comments don't help him. You know, he's done some stupid things on social media, but, you know, he, of course, was a guy who made a whole bunch of money and then lost it all, so. You know, he kind of fit into the example there that I was going with, but yeah, he's
exactly
definitely
right.
not a nice human being. So,
to say the least.
you know, that just, yeah, just kind of worked into what we were going with there. So I was like, well, you know, we'll throw Curt Schilling out here, and you know, you can decide about him personally, but yeah, he just kind of fit the bill as a guy who lost all his money.
Yeah, he was a gutsy ball player at least, though, right? And I was thinking of that bloody sock incident, right, with the famous story.
Yeah. Now, you know, there's a lot of people who think that was faked.
Really?
You know, and it was, yeah, and it wasn't as bad as it was actually made out to be. That's a big sports conspiracy.
Ah, well, you know, there's a lot of conspiracy theories going around in all facets of life.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's, you know, that's a whole other podcast. You know, we could do hours on those things. Yeah, you know, that's one of the bigger baseball ones was, you know, while they do believe that, you know, the stitches opened and it did bleed, a lot of people don't believe it was anywhere near what it turned out to be, and they think the, you know, the sock may have been doctored up to look worse, and you know, just a lot of those weird things like that.
Yeah, they're probably hidden in Hangar 54.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll never know the answer, the true answer.
Yeah, you know, only, well, Schilling would know. You know, he would be one of the guys who might know, you know, the truth behind it. But, yeah, there's always something out there that, you know, it's kind of like, what's this, or, you know, what's that type of thing. So, the big one.
That's his name from occasion, right? On occasion.
Well, remember the here locally was Michael Jordan was suspended for two years when he went to play baseball.
Right.
And they just didn't release it, you know.
Right. There was that conspiracy theory about that he was suspended for 2 years for gambling, right? And, wound up playing minor league ball, and well, he wasn't Michael Jordan in the minor leagues of baseball, that's for sure.
No, you know, definitely not. But yeah, that was always one of the the funnier ones was that, yeah, he, you know, they suspended him but kept it quiet and just allowed him to go play baseball.
Right.
So
it's dubious, rather dubious.
But yeah, you know, I know the other big one. Do you remember the frozen envelope NBA one where they said it was supposedly set up for the Knicks to win the draft lottery to get Patrick Ewing, and they did it by freezing the envelope so the commissioner would know which one to take out last?
I haven't heard that theory, but there's always been some rumors going around about the draft choices. And don't think it wasn't mentioned when Derrick Rose was selected by the Bulls, and that was a fluke. They had virtually no chance of getting Derrick Rose, and they wound up getting him. And there are theories about that as well.
Yeah, well, the other big one, you know, when Cal Ripken was having his streak, there was the one where he allegedly walked in on his wife and Kevin Costner. And he wasn't going to go to the game because of it. And that, of course, would have ended the streak.
Right.
So, you know, it's just kind of like, I don't know how much truth there is to any of this and what you believe. I mean, I would like to think more would have came out if Cal Ripken's wife was actually sleeping with Kevin Costner. But, you know, it's just one of those things you always kind of, you know, you kind of hear these things and, you know, all the, you know, there, I'm sure there's a few more, you know, off the top of my head that I can't think of, but
I'm sure
yeah,
there are
it's
a lot
just,
more bizarre ones than that too, go floating around.
Yeah. You know, it's just one of those, you know, those are just some of the bigger ones that I, you know, kind of remember off the, you know, off the top of my head, but there's been, you know, a ton of stuff that, you know, any NBA game, you know, being rigged and, you know, stuff like that. There's been always kind of, well, you know, we forgot one of the best ones was Ali's Phantom Punch that knocked out Sonny Liston.
Right.
God, I remember what it was. That was the 60s. It was before I was born.
Yeah, I saw that closed circuit fight, and it didn't look like he hit him, really. But some people said it was a great punch.
You know, and I, you know, I know the big NHL one is the draft one as well, that they rigged their lottery so Pittsburgh could get the number one pick because the franchise was struggling, and it allowed them to get Sidney Crosby, you know, with the number one pick to kind of save the franchise. You know, so yeah, there's stuff. I mean, you mentioned, you know, the Derrick Rose one. You know, there's one that says the NBA felt sorry for Cleveland after Miami, after LeBron signed with Miami, so they set it up so they got the number one pick. So yeah, just,
I was going to say, here's one you might not know about. I don't know if you ever heard this one. The Bulls' first year of existence in the NBA, I think it was around 66. Supposedly the word went out to take it easy on the Bulls the first two or three games. We went out to get off to a good start, and they won their first three games. Now, whether that was true or not, I don't know. Have you ever heard that one?
No, that's one I haven't heard, but I could see it. You know, it was kind of like we were trading emails last night, and I couldn't figure out why they didn't cancel the game until I realized that, you know, the Mickey Mouse Network probably didn't want to lose the ratings.
No.
Because, you know, the Cubs do great ratings for them, and, you know, right now they're a network in trouble. You know, they dug themselves in a big hole with some of the money they forked out, and, you know, they probably needed to hang on to that game for, you know, for life.
Right. Well, I don't think their rating was too high at 12:40 in the morning, though. Our time.
You know, you'd be surprised. You know, I mean, you stuck with it. I'm sure there were, you know, quite a few other Cub fans who stuck with it.
But not at Wrigley Field. And it looked pretty empty when that game ended.
Yeah, you know, you wonder, I would love to know if, like, those people who went thought it was worth it. You know, after having to sit there and wait the delay out and then just the game going so long. And, you know, I mean, I get it. I guess it's something you'll remember forever. But, I don't know. You know, I don't know if it would have been worth it to me.
Yeah. Well, I think I was going to stick around for another two more innings if Rizzo didn't come through with that hit. And that was good to see because he has not got off to a very good start. That's not unusual for him.
Yeah, so, you know, and I can tell you a quick update from yesterday. You know, we gave out both of Mr. Fantasy's lineups. Oddly, they both scored around right about the same points. He did have a lot of similar players. He was right around 156. And he entered them in separate leagues. And one league he won $8 and one league he won $2. So if you followed along his lineups from yesterday, you may have at least got your money back. Sadly, I did not receive anything from him today, so you're kind of on your own from FanDuel. He said he was going to send them to me, but I just never got them. Maybe we'll be able to wrangle him, get some in tomorrow. So, but yeah, hopefully you followed along yesterday and were able to pick yourself up some money.
Yeah, he made $10 overall, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, he technically he spent $1 for each lineup, so he made $8. He spent $2, he won $10. So, you know, not a bad turnaround there.
No, not at all.
But, you know, we do have some stuff. Well, we have one game going on right now. The White Sox and the Indians are tied 1-1 going in the bottom of the eighth. We got one final from earlier. The Detroit Tigers beat the Minnesota Twins 2-1. Matt Boyd got the win. Hector Santiago took the loss, and Francisco Rodriguez picked up a save. The rest of the schedule looks like this. We got the Cardinals at the Nationals. That's the Mickey Mouse Network game. Lance Lynn against Gio Gonzalez. The Mets at the Phillies. It's Matt Harvey against Clay Buchholz. The Reds at the Pirates. It's rookie Davis against Jameson Taillon. The Brewers at the Blue Jays. Willie Peralta against J.A. Hopp. The Orioles at the Red Sox. Dylan Bundy against Drew Pomerantz. Pomerantz just making his first start off the DL. The Braves at the Marlins, Bartolo Colon against Dan Straley, former Cub Dan Straley. The Padres at the Rockies, Jared Weaver against Antonio Senzaltala. Yeah, I butchered that one. The Rangers at the Angels, Cole Hamels against Tyler Skaggs. The Astros at the Mariners, Joe Musgrove against Ariel Miranda. And the night wraps up with the Diamondbacks at the Giants. It's Robbie Ray against former Cub great Jeff Samardzija.
How has Jeff done this? I haven't been following him. How's he done so far this season?
you know, I believe his first start was pretty good here. Let me see if they got his numbers. Well, no, actually, maybe I was wrong there. He went 5 1/3 innings, 8 hits, 6 runs, gave up 3 home runs. He walked 2, but did strike out 9. So, yeah, I mean, not as good as I thought. Of course, he did take the loss, no surprise there. Maybe it was the 9 strikeouts that threw me when I thought he had a good outing.
Yeah, that was pretty
impressive
as first start.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's weird because I thought he might prosper being the number 4 starter for the Giants, you know, just because his matchups would be better. I thought he had a chance to really kind of break out and have a, you know, a 15-plus win season. But, man, he just got, you know, and it's only one start, so you can't exactly, you know, kill him. But, yeah, it just didn't get off good for him.
No,
so,
not at all.
You know, and, you know, his loss, his last outing was against Arizona where he got roughed up. So we'll have to see if he has better luck against them tonight.
Yeah. You know, you're talking about Cleveland and the White Sox. They're playing right now 1-1 in the 8th inning. I've got a question for you. Do you think Cleveland's a good baseball town?
Oh, well, you know, this is interesting because Dan actually got into a quite the Twitter war with some Indians fans last year about this when, you know, he does not believe they are. They, of course, obviously defended themselves, and, you know, they went back and forth for a while with no real winner decided. I would like to think they are, especially when they have a winner, but when you go back and look, they don't draw very well for a team that has a winning franchise.
That's my point. That is my point. Especially last season, they were virtually wire to wire in the AL Central. A lot of no sellouts. I mean, to say the least, poor attendance. I thought, and to me, that's not being a good baseball town. Especially when you have a winning team. If you have a winning team, you have to support that team better than what they've done.
Yeah, it's it was a little surprising when I looked up, you know, because we always look at the attendance, you know, just to kind of see who's doing what and who's drawing and that kind of stuff. And I was really shocked to find them close to the bottom attendance-wise. You know, you expect, like, the Miamis to be down there and,
right.
You know, some of the other rough teams. You know, the White Sox are always towards the bottom. You know, no matter what they do, they just never seem to draw. But yeah, I was kind of shocked when I realized Cleveland was down there, and then, you know, with the season they had, I mean, you're looking at a team that went to the Super Bowl the World Series, sorry, wrong sport there.
Right.
But yeah, you wonder, you know, why they don't go to the games.
Yeah. Especially when you're a winner like that. I mean, you can see it. If a team, even the Cubs, when I saw them in the '60s, and they had horrible attendance when they were buried in 10th place. I mean, really embarrassing attendance. So the fans gave up after a while, but never completely. But when they start to turn things around and become a winner, that's when you see sellout crowds every game. And it doesn't hold that way for all the teams in the majors.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of people who don't realize that, yeah, the Cubs actually – used to have quite a bit of attendance problems. You know, and the funny thing is, like, that famous rant from Lee Elia even mentions it, you know, the way he refers to the attendance. So yeah, when you go back, I mean, they, you know, they struggled for a long time as, you know, a losing team, not only besides the World Series streak, they just, you know, were always kind of sub 500, and yeah, they didn't draw. And, you know, then it, you know, it kind of worked out. They got a little competitive, and, you know, the Wrigleyville area became the place to be. So
right.
You go to the game, and then you hang out down there all night.
Well, that started probably when cable came on, because WGN was a superstation, and a lot of the broadcasting was Cub games were on TV, national TV, and the people saw the ballpark, and they wanted to visit the ballpark. and that helped the Cubs tremendously. But before that, they've had seasons when they were really a bad team. They were less than a million a couple of times. I remember that, which is hard to believe by today's standards. So,
yeah, that's a shock when you think about it.
Yeah, it's very discouraging. And I've been to many games in my time, and never had a problem walking up the day of a game and going inside and less than capacity crowd. I was a diehard, but it took me a long time before it paid off for me.
Yeah, it took obviously quite some time, to get there. But they did finally, and hopefully they'll get back. It won't be the last time that they get there. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, we have to start getting some pitchers in the system, in the minor league system now. I think because Arrieta is not a youngster and Lester is not a youngster, and of course Anderson. So I think they're going to have to start looking for. Of course, there's always free agency. Importance in the game, pitching and defense.
That seems to be the Cubs' route, is to sign those pitchers, because they, they can develop hitting. They've done a fantastic job of that, but for some reason they just do not develop pitching at all. It seems to be the opposite on the other side of town. The Sox do a great job of developing their young pitchers, and they just can't develop hitters.
Yeah, they've had problems. But what's the guy we're talking about, Charlotte? Do off to a good start, the infielder? I forgot his name already.
Moncada. Yoan Moncada.
Yeah. He seems very promising.
So, yeah, that's how it is. I know the one guy they picked up in the deal is throwing, 100 plus miles an hour. So, we'll see if, how it works out for him. I mean, it's so tough, especially with pitchers, there's just such a long way to go, to get to the majors. It's just like, okay, great. Who do we,
Right.
Who can we get here? How can we get there?
And you get there healthy, getting there healthy.
Yeah. And that's the case. I mean, you bring up the Mets, they were supposed to have this vaunted staff that was going to dominate, and I don't think any of them have been healthy.
No, none of them. But they've had a lot of problems.
At the same time.
Starting pitching, yeah.
It's just, it's one of those odd things where it's kind of like, okay, well, are we ever going to see them all healthy and together?
Right.
seems to be the big question with them. And even now, they're still missing guys.
Yeah, they are. And it's too bad for the Mets organization, but they look so dominant. A great young starting pitching staff and loaded with injuries.
Yeah. Ah. Did get them to a World Series. But all right, well, it's time for Snoop and I to head out. But don't worry, Snoop's coming back one more day. So he'll be here with me tomorrow. Remember, it's 5 o'clock when Stu's here. So he'll be back for that. But you know the deal while we're not gone. SportsTimeRadio.com. Check out all the cool stuff there. Follow the link to the Facebook page. Give that a like. Jump on the Twitter feed at SportsTimeRadio. Check that out. Maybe we can start a campaign to get Stu a Twitter feed or something. As always, a big thanks for listening live. And don't forget, you can get the podcast anytime you want now at tunein.com.